Next question for Mr. Cancio. What do you feel Tuolumne County should do in response to the growing issue of homelessness?
Homelessness is a complex issue. It's an issue about personal choice. It's about drug addiction. And it's about people down and out of their luck. If people are down and out of their luck and they want a hand up, we should provide that for them. And that we could provide through businesses, faith-based organizations, individuals, and social services. We need to work as a team to address this complex issue. If it was simple, we wouldn't have this. People in other cities wouldn't have this. So for me to say, this is how we're going to do it, no, I can't do it by myself. We as a community have to come in together and pitch and say, we need to help each other out so we can help the people who want the hand up. If they want to stay there, that's their personal choice, and I have yet to talk to them. But if that's what they want to do, I want to honor that as well.
Thank you. Mr. Kirk.
The question again is, how are we going to deal with homelessness?
Yeah, the question is, what do you feel Tuolumne County should do in response to the growing issue of homelessness?
So, first of all, as a citizen, I don't want to look to the government to be fixing all the problems of society. I firmly believe that churches, private organizations, volunteers, those are the types of people who we should, as a government, getting behind and saying, what resources, what can we do to back you, to help you, to help these people. I've met some of the homeless people. Some of them I picked up hitchhiking. Some of them I met at church. Some of them like that lifestyle. They don't like having certain responsibilities or bills to pay. There is also a huge mental health issue. Working in law enforcement, the majority of people who show up in the prison, I'm a supervising counselor there, they have mental health issues. So for me, I don't want the government getting involved much. I want private industry. I want people solutions, like that bus, you know, that was created by that group of people for showers. That's something that didn't cost us. It didn't cost us taxpayers. And then finally, economy. We got to grow our economy. Economy means more jobs and also affordable housing, which I don't want the government to be paying for. I want to restore property rights back to people, and they will build accessory buildings on their property, and it will help. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rasmussen.
Well, the Tuolumne County did form a homeless task committee, but they came up with what their answer was, what I already knew, and a lot of other veterans have been talking about, because we, as veterans, we are always focused on veterans issues, and one of them is homelessness, and that is it's going to take a community effort. It's going to take a strong nonprofit to come in and address this issue. And at the same time, we don't want to facilitate and aggravate the issue, and that's a difficult decision. It's like, one, we don't want to have a homeless camp, but at the same time, we have to do something to provide a safe environment to provide services, whether that be a facility that houses them so that our county services can get to them and provide them the services that they need. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Sylvester.
Thank you. Well, it hasn't worked yet not to have the government involved. I don't think that we should reinvent the wheel. We need the city and county working together, not separately. We do not need the city pushing off into the county the problem. We need to have the city, the county, the regional people all working together. We need to see where it's worked before. I've talked to a gentleman who helped start out in Bakersfield in the 1980s, and he says, we are here where they were then, and they have some successful answers. We do need to look to see where it's running and scaled in the way that we can scale. We also have to ask ourselves, is an owner of the single-family home able to get permission to add a small rental unit onto their property without any real hassle? Do we have obstacles to having pre-manufactured tiny homes in this county? Yes, we do. Do we have people that are going to oppose those? Yes, we do. Do we need to address them? Yes, we do. We need to kind of tick off everybody, because this homeless thing isn't going away, and it's not going to go away by waiting for somebody to do something.
Thank you. Mr. Hanvelt.
Thank you. This is an important issue, and we know that ATCA did a point-in-time study recently, and they came up with 711. They think that was off by as much as 30 to 35%, so we probably have 1,000. The real sad story about that is an awful lot of them are children under the age of 18. The average age of homeless in this country is 9 years old. That's a crime. That's a tragedy that we have to do something about. I go to meetings at California State Association of Counties and National Association of Counties. Homeless is commonly a topic. I go in, and there are no solutions that seem to work. And there are many stories about why homelessness exists, as there are people out there with them. But we got to do something. And all the solutions, providing homeless camps or whatever, don't seem to work. So the issue is, who's going to do it? Give Someone a Chance Foundation just did something. They put a putting together a shower bus. Personal hygiene is what they're doing. They're putting their money where their mouth is. It's the only tangible result I've seen in this county. It's a good deal. Congratulations to them.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell.
So I'm a believer that how we treat the least of our residents represents us as a community. Mm-hmm. It is very important that we focus on this issue and find a solution. There is no single reason that explains why homelessness has been increasing in our community. You can attribute it to the lack of available housing, reduced economic opportunities, an increase in drug abuse, and the lack of programs available to people who would benefit from them. Just like there is no single reason for the cause of homelessness, there's no single solution to it. We need to form partnerships between the different faith-based organizations in our community. We need to shore up funding for behavioral health, which provides services to people with substance abuse and also people with mental illness or who are at risk of homelessness. It isn't good enough to just wait for somebody who's homeless to commit a crime or screw up and end up in jail. We need to attack these problems ahead of time.
Thank you. Mr. Tichenor.
Well, the thing about going last is there's not much else to say on the subject. But what I will say is that I believe that homelessness is a three-prong issue. There are people out there that have made the choice to be homeless as a lifestyle, or their drug addictions or other things keep them out there, their unwillingness to conform to society. And a lot of those people need to be taken in by the justice system and dealt with that way if they have warrants for arrests or other crimes that they're breaking or anything else. We need to get the justice system involved. Number two are people who, for no fault of their own, maybe it's a single mother with a couple of kids without an education whose two waitressing jobs doesn't allow her to keep up on her rental payments, and she ends up getting behind and finds herself living out of a car. There's lots that we can do, not as government, but as a community through NGOs, non-government organizations, to help take care of those kind of people and get them back on the road. And then there's the mental health issue, which for years we have ignored and haven't had the budgets or anything else to do anything about it, but they'll pick up all the rest of the people that are out there due to mental health.
Thank you. And moving on to the next question, we're going to start with Mr. Kirk. There are growing calls in the community about the need for more affordable housing. What type of actions would you like to see the county take?
Yeah, so growing up in this community, I'm well aware, had it not been for me and my wife saving for a decade, we wouldn't have been able to afford a home as well and buy some property. So I did a lot of research on this issue, and just let me tell you, I'm not going to joke you. We live 2.5 hours away from Silicon Valley, one of the most expensive places in the world to live. So if you think we're going to have affordable housing, that's not going to happen. You get people from the Bay moving up here buying homes. So what I'd rather see is attracting more young people who come up, buy homes, with them bring a strong, maybe telecommuters to bring a strong tax base, bring some jobs for young people. But something that I found that was really awesome that they're doing in other parts of the country is they're restoring property rights back to people. So if you live in a zone R1-3, you can build. They let these people build accessory buildings. So you have a big home, you have somebody who builds a small home that now opens up more affordable housing, more on the market, puts people to work. It's a very simple, easy solution. So I'd get together with Dave Gonzalez and say, hey, what can we do to create a better environment to allow homeowners to do what they want with their land that they purchase?
Thank you. And Mr. Rasmussen.
Housing. We've been dealing with that for a long time. There's a lot of plans out there that never come to fruition. Even my family, we're looking at buying another piece of property, but it's unaffordable because the market's stagnant. And if listening to the general plan, and David Gonzalez had done a really good job, he explained it really well. Contractors, businessmen, investors, they rather go down the valley and build a tract home, or they can build 100 homes and make most profit. Up here, we have a difficult environment. We got hills, so it's not cost effective. So the best thing we can do is just continue to examine what restrictions or what other ways the county can help provide more assistance for builders and bring them into the county. But also, let's not forget, when we talk about zoning and putting more houses on property, is that we need to make sure our environment is taken care of as well. We have a lot of failing septic systems and other things that we need to address. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Sylvester?
Well, the price to start up many of the current home may be run as much as $150,000 before there's a stick put down. So the price of the property, the price of the startup, and the requirements that are in front of you are one of the first obstacles. We maybe should consider having a discussion, not pre-decided, but a discussion in our community about, for instance, where we have mobile parks, the thought of creating a mini house park, something where there can be very small scale homes to start people out. A lot of the younger students that I have are interested in at least starting out with a smaller scale and living with a little bit less, and we could accommodate that. But currently, just to start stick built, it is really, really pricey. So we have to look at the zoning issues and the general plan to make sure that we've covered some of those issues. And we have to look at mitigation costs. We certainly want things to be offset and the expenses.
Thank you. And Mr. Hanvelt.
Affordable housing is an oxymoron. It has been in the state and has been in the country. It doesn't exist. And the rules get tougher and tougher. Some of them have alluded to that already. The building codes get tougher and they put cost on, and they're not necessarily adding real value to the problem. The only affordable housing built in this county has been built on the financial grave of failed development. And you can see that where development has failed once or twice, and then they're able to buy it at cents on the dollar and build something that we can call affordable. Habitat for Humanity. Humanity does the best job in the county, and it's built on the financial grave of failed development. It's subsidized. That's not a sustainable plan. We have to push back on some of these building code requirements, and we have to find ways to build homes that people can afford to move into. It just doesn't exist right now. It's a challenge. It's a challenge statewide and nationally.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell.
So affordable housing is a difficult question when it's posed to the board. I mean, they can zone for any type of housing that you want, but that doesn't necessarily mean that a builder is going to come in and build the housing that we need in this community. What's lacking is economic activity. If it was profitable, if there was demand for these kind of homes at an affordable rate, and if builders could do it and make a profit, then they would be here. What's missing is that the average incomes of our residents are lower than the rest of the state. There aren't enough opportunities for entrepreneurship. We need facilities like broadband internet and improved roads to bring in economic activity first. Also help contribute to our tourism industry, which produces a lot for this county. Those are the issues that we need to focus on, and housing will come after that. Until we finish dealing with those problems, affordable housing is never going to be available.
Thank you. Mr. Tichenor.
The problem with housing is, again, I think it's a lot of it is because government gets in the way. It's a supply and demand. We have a declining population in Tuolumne County. I don't see where that's going to change anytime soon until we can do more in the ways of attracting more business up here and getting more people to look at this as a place to relocate to. Housing is going to continue to stay pretty much the way it is. We're very popular for McMansions, people who want a small acreage with a big, huge house on it, but not so much for the subdivisions like Willow Spring and Crystal Falls in the days of yesterday. And until we can create a climate that makes that attractive, it's $75,000 for those stone mill developers to have to fight this last thing, which they won, thank God. But I think a lot of the problems that we have are going to continue to be government standing in the way. By no fault of their own, it's just, I mean, government, that's the way it works. And they make it difficult on contractors and developers and everything else, and those fees are very high. So let supply and demand take care of it.
Thank you. And Mr. Cancio. Thank
you. 30 years ago, when I was beginning teacher, we had 1,000 kids at Curtis Creek School. Most of them lived in Phoenix Lakes, Nora Meadows, Crystal Falls. What's happening now? We have 454 kids. Where did all those families go? It's because they can't afford to buy a house. We all want that American dream, to own our own home. So we got to figure it out how to work together to get it done. Again, it takes not just the building industry. It's also going to take other people, like Responsible Growth, to get together and say, you guys, let's work towards the common good, towards the common goal, which is affordable housing. How can we work together instead of fighting with each other to create development that's smart, that's responsible, and that is affordable? We cannot do it all from one side or the other. We have to work as a team.
Thank you. And now moving on to the next question. Mr. Rasmussen, you will be the first person. School enrollment has been on a general downward slide over the past couple of decades. That's been referenced a little bit already this evening by some of your responses. How can the county keep young people here so they can raise a family?
We have all the fundamentals that we need. We have the organizations that we need. We have the people that we need, like TUI and a lot of other very important teachers in our community. As a young individual, I've been around the world, been across the United States. I was just fortunate enough to say, this is where I want to raise my family. So that's where I was raised. Did fairly well, and child enrollment, it's all tied into economics. It's tied into businesses. It's tied into housing. It's tied into internet. It's tied into all these different issues that have lagged and lagged and lagged, and here we are, and now we're at the point where we have to hit everything at once. So it's gonna take time and good leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Sylvester.
Like Merv, I was at Twain Hart Elementary in 1961, and the school population is lower than it was in 1961 at the height that was pushing toward 900. And that's really a concern. As the area in Twain Hart ages and becomes more of a senior community, I'm deeply concerned. So I've asked a lot of my former students, what would it take? I've asked the young people that have come up here right now, what's it take to get you here? And they do say, broadband. For us to have our own small businesses, we need to have really good broadband coverage. Number two, of course, we need good cell coverage. We need to have affordable housing. And the ones that have been moving up from the Bay Area or returning from the Bay Area have said, housing in the Bay Area is not affordable. We came back up here and found it affordable, comparatively speaking. So, but a culture for the young 30-somethings that they enjoy the nightlife. Our cultural community, our arts, our recreation are very important for young families and young people.
Thank you. And Mr. Hanvelt.
Thank you. School enrollment's down because our families aren't staying here. We aren't encouraging people to come here, and it's all economic development. We need jobs for people, and broadband is part of the game because they need broadband to do that, but we need to create jobs. That's why I pushed real hard for the county to push on this master stewardship agreement with the Forest Service so maybe we can get back and manage our forests. That's a public safety issue. It's an environmental issue. It's a water issue. It's tourism. It's recreation. No losers in that when we do that, and we can pour the money back into making our forests safe again, and maybe we can attract the jobs, the living wage jobs for people, and then we can afford to grow our schools again and grow our economy. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Campbell.
Well, I do have children that are almost at the age where they're going to be entering the Tuolumne County Public School System. And as others have said, the main problem is not school enrollment, it's opportunities for these students' parents. As others have said as well, broadband internet is a big part of that. In years past, we had the gold mines, and then we had forestry, and that employed a large percentage of our population. We don't have that anymore. We don't have a magic bullet that is going to provide jobs for everybody. We have to have a mixed economy. We have to pull every stop that we can, whether it's small-scale industrial, small-scale web-based companies, that touches on broadband as well, and mom-and-pop stores. They've been leaving. Our working-age population has been leaving because of a lack of opportunity. And that is the root cause of why our enrollments are down.
Thank you. And Mr. Tichenor.
declining school enrollments can be attributed to the declining population in general, but it also has to do with competition to public schools. We now have charter schools, and we have a lot of real good success stories from homeschooling. And I personally would like to see even more of that. I am not not a big fan of the teachers' unions. I know that's not a great thing to say, but I will say it. I think the teachers' unions, in a way, have not put the children's best interest at heart when it comes to funding our schools and the power that they yield over the schools. So the more that we can see students enter into homeschooling programs or even charter schools where they at least have a chance to make a choice, I think that's a good thing. Declining enrollment is going to continue to happen until we can better our economy.
Thank you. Mr. Cancio.
Yes. So if we're going to have more kids, we have to have families that will stay here. That in order for them to stay here, they're going to need jobs. They're going to need affordable homes. Those two are tied together. So in regards to jobs, we need to retain, attract, and expand the businesses that we have. In terms of retention, UltraPower has over 25 employees that have $3.5 million add to our economy. They have a five-year contract, 1 year into it. I'm going to do everything I can in my power to keep that UltraPower plant going because they are an integral part of our community. If that industry shuts down, we're going to be in even bigger trouble. So we want to do retain, but we also want to attract. So, sorry, my time's up. I'll get back to it.
Thank you. And Mr. Kirk.
Yeah, so schools, like Dave said, are big. The reason why we don't have enrollment are there are charter schools. There's a lot of homeschool. It's a very growing, popular thing in our community, so that is one thing. As far as growing up and being, you know, in this community, economy. We need to get with people like Larry Cope. My brother's a business owner. Get with business owners. Say, what can we do as a government to get behind you to make a better, friendlier business environment so that when people come from the Bay who want to get out of there and who want to come to a quieter place of life, that they're not going to the surrounding counties, but that they're funneling to Tuolumne County, growing our economy, and that will in essence, lift that ship. But I am here to tell you guys, when I was done with college, I was getting ready to go to law school. And one of the reasons why I didn't go to law school is because I wanted to raise a family in this community. So it's a great place to raise raise children. I hope we get to talk about big marijuana cultivation because that is going to jeopardize everything that we're all talking about tonight. And, I came here to raise my family in a quiet, peaceful way of life. And I'd rather make less money to do that.
Thank you very much. So now moving to the next question, and let's talk about marijuana. That's the next one on the list. So Ms. Sylvester, this question is for you. What are your views on recreational and commercial marijuana in Tuolumne County, and what do you see as the short-term and long-term effects on the county?
Thank you. The whole initiative, Prop 64, was poorly designed. I voted against it. I don't use marijuana for the record, and I'd prefer to see the state and feds uniformly address it. There's already a patchwork of local ordinances. I've heard exactly one person, a current supervisor, who thought that it would be a good idea if there's a commercial growing ordinance that there should favor a big corporate grower. I'm absolutely not in favor of a single big business corporate type commercial grow. Some are calling this big marijuana. There are people like medical users that have anonymously called me. There are people that are concerned about their neighborhoods because houses are being bought up to put marijuana in them. I want to hear from the timid. I want to hear from the people that are not being addressed in public. And I want to hear from both sides because we can't have this the biggest bully wins in public. That's not what I'm about. I want to hear from both sides, and I'm going to keep my mind open to those people.
Thank you. And Mr. Hanvelt.
Good question. It's a big topic all over the state of California. You know, it's a Schedule I drug federally, and so we have a little issue there. But Prop 64 did pass. 52.2%, I think, was the number in Tuolumne County. And some people who voted for it told me they wouldn't vote for it again if it came up because they didn't vote for commercial marijuana. They voted to just let people use it. We're using it already. It's a terribly difficult problem. So we now have an ordinance that allows people for medical and personal use because the state of California says we need to do that. six plants. So commercial marijuana, one of my big concerns, and has always been one of my big concerns, it's no secret, I'm concerned about increased availability of the drug to our children, because there's pretty heavy statistics that show that heavy use of that in the formative years, particularly brain formation years, causes irreversible brain damage. I'm not willing to put my kids at risk or your kids. So, by the way, the vast majority of people have talked to me do not want commercial marijuana in this county.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell.
So this is one of those questions where nobody is going to be 100% happy with any answer that anybody up here gives.
That's correct.
What informs my decision on this, I'll just tell you a little story. My mother was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. They gave her about 2 weeks to live, and she's still kicking, fortunately. Shows you how stubborn Campbell's can be. One of the drugs that she uses to treat her illness is Marinol, which is a derivative of marijuana. Now, it helps her with her appetite, and it has mild pain-relieving effects, which enables her not to take harder narcotics. My opinion on marijuana has changed greatly because of the experience I've seen through my mother's eyes. There is a role for marijuana in our society. It can be used safely. It is not going to corrupt our children if we address it in the correct way. And I think the cultivation question can be handled with zoning and by learning from the experiences of other communities in Oregon, and also learning from the bad experiences of nearby counties as well. So I think there is an answer that can make the most people happy and make this work in our county.
Thank you. Mr. Tichenor.
Yeah, talking with Supervisor Dennis Mills over in Calaveras County, his word of advice was just don't do it. And because marijuana is a Schedule I federal drug, that is why it is an all-cash business here in California. Problem with a cash business, as you can well imagine, is that it's really hard to track what the true numbers are. If you're dealing in cash, it's so much easier to hide what your true profits are. The other part of that is you're paying all of your employees in cash. So we'll have a transient worker issue where workers come up here, get paid in cash, their pockets will be bulging, yet on paper they're still very poor and can apply for government services and food stamps and other types of medical services and stuff. And that's just not right. So I'm going to go with watching what happened in Calaveras County, and I'm going to say no to commercial cultivation.
Thank you. And Mr. Cancio.
From my perspective as an educator, all my colleagues, the Margie Book and Superintendent of Schools, the Somerville High passed a resolution saying no to commercial marijuana. We have to deal with that in our school system, and we don't want that to grow any worse than what it is. Whatever revenue you're going to get from commercial marijuana, it's not going to be enough to solve the social issues, the law enforcement issues, and all the other unforeseen issues that's going to come up with that. So for me, vote no on November for no taxation. That is where the next fight is. I need the voters to be well-versed, read the measure to make sure that it doesn't pass. Because if it says, yes, we're going to support marijuana cultivation, then you're going to have to say yes on taxation. I say vote no on taxation for commercial grow.
Thank you. And Mr. Kirk.
All right. When it comes to medicinal marijuana, I'm okay with that, especially if it comes from a doctor. I wish that would be the only way. When it comes to recreational marijuana, my opinion doesn't matter because it's law under Prop 64. However, when it comes to cultivation, we as a county have the option to do a complete ban or allow it. I've spent 220 hours. This is one of the issues that got me involved with this, is as a law enforcement officer, as a father, as a common sense citizen, this one issue alone has the potential to completely wreck our community. If you look at what's going on in Calaveras, if you look at what's going on in Colorado, I've reached out to the commissioners out there. The best example I can give you guys is if you turn the light on at nighttime, what comes? All the bugs. As a county, if we allow one ordinance, all those people, we may have 500 illegal grows going on right now, but over the course if we allow an ordinance, you're going to see thousands upon thousands of people come in here. They're going to change the way our community runs. They're going to change the neighbors. And it's not going to be a place where I want to raise my family. So until the dust settles, I'm going to be a complete no. And I am the only one who stood up and voiced my concern. He says he's
all
no.
All right, we're going to have to cut you off there. Thank you, Mr. Kirk. And Mr. Rasmussen.
Can I give up my time so that I'll let Anaya accuse me of something?
We're going to move on to Mr.
Rasmussen. I plead the second.
We definitely need more time on this subject. I'm probably the most pro-cannabis candidate up here on the board right now. With everything comes responsibility. Responsibility. You want to be concerned about drugs. Let's be concerned about alcohol. Okay, that destroys more families. That kills more people. I had to watch my dad die for 15 years because of a drunk driver in this county with my own two eyes for 15 years. And the cannabis actually helped him in the latter part of his life. You know, policies. We were sold a bill of goods when the voters approved this. Voters were told we were going to get more money. Voters told we were going to have less law enforcement issues. And that's not the case, especially just recently when the Board of Supervisors approved the personal use ordinance and then directly turned around and hired another police officer, more code enforcement, at the tune of $500,000 going out the window. And we haven't even made any money on this that we were told we were going to make. It's policies. We have Calaveras. We know what they've done wrong, and we need to do what's going to be right. And one of those things is not having a list. And a list has targeted those poor people over there for burglaries and more crimes. Thank you.
Thank you very much for answering all those questions this evening. We are now at the part where we're going to have closing statements. Again, this is 3 minutes in length, and it's a chance to respond to anything tonight. It's a chance to bring up any issues that weren't asked about this evening that you're passionate about, or talk about anything specific to your district, whatever you so choose. But it's 3 minutes near your time. We're back to Mr. Hanvelt, and we'll start with you.
KVML,
okay,
Sonora.
Thank you, BJ. Again, thank Clark Broadcasting for doing this and all the audience both here in this room and those listening live on at home. Comes back to the same thing I said in the beginning. Who can be most effective at making it happen for you? And contrary to what one of my opponents said, something about you don't need to be outside the district, you do need to be outside the district. Because if you're not at the table, I promise you, you're on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be there where they're setting policy and they're making decisions, and you have to influence that. We won't be at every table, but we need to be at as many as possible. I've positioned myself to be there better than anybody else, and that's because I am the vice chairman of the Rural Counties Association called RCRC, and that opens doors for me. I'm connected with more people on the governor's immediate staff and the organizations that support the governor, including OAS, CAL FIRE, and others. And I'm also connected with several assembly members and senators. I'm routinely asked to testify at Senate budget hearings, and that makes a difference because they listen to us. I'm also connected with a number of congressmen around the state, from Amalfi on the north, including Garamendi and Barra and McClintock and Denham and Costa and others. I'm connected to both offices of our senators. Couldn't say that one. Boxer was our senator, but Harris has reached out to us, so we're connected with them, and they ask our opinion. And connected with the U.S. Forest Service and the BLM in Washington, Department of Interior, and it makes a difference. They ask us. We went back there. With the Rural Counties Association, we brought back SRS, Secure Rural Schools dollars, which helps our schools and our roads. It's on a declining amount, but we got 2 years done, and that's never been done before. We got money for fire funding on the forest fire and to free up funding to do manage our forests, and we got money for forest health. That's pretty good because, very frankly, that's never been done before. Now, I can't take credit for all that, but I was there helping with that, carrying the message. It's important we carry the message to those people so they hear it from us. I'm best connected to do that, and I can continue to do that when you reelect me. I seriously and humbly ask for your vote because I'll make it happen for you. You are always on my mind. You're the most important thing to this county, the people of this county, and your kids and grandkids count. That's what I'm about, and so thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell.
Thank you, and thank you for this opportunity to speak to the public, and thank you all for being in attendance and listening at home. It's very important to make the correct decision in these elections, and I appreciate that. So we have a lot of requirements that we need in this community. I've learned that from speaking to my neighbors, talking to people in the district, and we're very independent people here in Tuolumne County. We don't expect a lot from our government. We just want the basics. We want law enforcement. We want fire services. We want roads. We want our libraries. I think that we need to decide what we want in this community and work toward that. I'm a very goal-oriented person. I decide what I want ahead of time, and then I work forward toward that goal. So if we want to live in a community that has full schools, we need to have economic opportunities, and they have to be a variety of economic opportunities. Now, what the Board of Supervisors can do to bring that is they can use public and private investment to build high-speed internet lines, increase our broadband internet access, and improve potential for entrepreneurs. Now, I work for the Office of Emergency Services. I'm responsible for a large portion of the county's tree mortality project. I'm very proud of the work that I and others have done to take down trees and remove this terrible hazard from our community. We've taken down about 5,000 trees that otherwise would have fallen on your homes or your public roads. I love my job. I love what I do. If I'm elected, I will quit my job. I will focus full-time on being a supervisor because that's what we need. We need somebody who will spend all their time solving problems, which is what I like to do. Now, I have a lot of concerns for our community, and that's why I wanted to run. I want to see this as a place where my children can go to school and have opportunities when they get out, be able to thrive and prosper. And the board can do a lot to make that happen. We can invest in our infrastructure. Roads has been brought up a lot tonight, and I'm sorry, I'm going to bring it up again. Some of the AB1 money is going to go to resurfacing projects. We can't go from one disaster to another. We've gone from, you know, the Rim Fire, the Oak Fire, to you know, the different weather events we've had over the past 2 years. We have to start planning ahead, and we have to set aside money under the assumption that our roads will need to be repaired with that in mind. My phone number is 209-681-2681. That's my personal cell phone. If you have any questions or if you have any concerns, anything I can help with, you can call me. Thank you very much.
Call me. There it is.
Thank you. And Mr. Tichenor.
We live in a tyrannical state. The biggest tyrant of all is Governor Jerry Brown. The voice of the people in the rural counties doesn't matter to him. It doesn't matter to Kevin DeLeon. Doesn't matter to any of those people down there. One of the reasons I got involved in the state of Jefferson is because the state of Jefferson is only about two things. It's about the lack of representation and that our vote has been severely diluted since it was created. Our Constitution was created in 1879. Now, we have gotten used to living off of scraps from the master's table, and we're willing to be abused and take the abuse of this tyrannical state because we don't know to do anything else. So one of the things that I want to see is something like the state of Jefferson. If not the state of Jefferson, we have to do something to bring our representation back. One of the reasons I'm sitting up here trying to become your next supervisor is because I believe very strongly in that. And I believe so much so that me and other people went around and visited with all five of our supervisors privately and talked to them about the state of Jefferson. And we were assured that if we were able to pack a room when we presented it, that it would go in our favor. And we put 400 people in the fairgrounds, and yet we still didn't get but one yes vote on that. Another thing that has bothered me is the sanctuary state issue. I sat right here at this table with a couple of other gentlemen, and we brought it up after Tehama did their resolution, and we asked Tuolumne County to do the same in February of 2017. Again, I came in here after the state Senate passed AB 54, and it was on its way to the assembly, and I stood at that podium and asked again if we would at least bring it up for a vote, if we would at least least discuss it in the county. And again, I was met with silence. And in at the beginning of this year, sanctuary state status did pass. And so now we are living in a state that does not follow the immigration laws of the Constitution of the United States. And that bothers me. I also was bothered by the fact that, and again, I stood at this podium and said I did not believe it was a good idea for the supervisors to raise their salaries, and that if they were going to raise the salary because they felt it was too low, it would be a good idea for them not to profit from them by it personally, that they should make sure that it takes effect on whoever takes over their office when they leave. And again, that was met with silence, or it didn't go for that. So those are some of the reasons why I decided that I needed to jump into this race. Those are things that bother me in my core as a constitutional person. I'll do anything to protect this country and to do it, make sure that our Constitution is not abused and that we follow it. We also have – okay, I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cancio.
So I'll close with this. We have issues. We got to figure out how to solve that problem. One of my models that I'm going to use is the Master Stewardship Agreement. You have 24 entities getting together to solve a problem because they decided they had a common goal, which is to have a healthy forest. When you have TRUCARE and when you have CSERC in the same room, in the same table, coming up with a solution, that gives me hope that things can be done. And so with that, I would use that model to bring all the stakeholders together to come to the table and say, look, here's the problem. What is our common goal? What is the common good for our community? Not for you, but for all of us. We need to work together. And that is my strong suit, is to bring people together, listen to you, figure out a way so that we can all live together as neighbors. Because in the end, whether we disagree or not, or we can disagree to disagree, we can agree to disagree respectfully, my apologies there. And so with that, I'm just going to close with this. To be an effective supervisor, I will spend numerous hours building relationships with my constituents and other stakeholders. I will spend the necessary time to gain their trust and respect through hard work and dedication. And that's the key there. I am trusted because I work hard, my work is good, and I take the time to get to know you. If I don't know my students and they don't know me, we get nowhere. If I get to know you, you get to know me, we can get things done. And that's the key here, is to get things done. Not just, I can't BS you and tell you do this, do that. Let's work together. Let's get to know each other because we are all neighbors. We live in this community and we want what's best for it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Kirk.
And thank you for the 3 minutes. I feel like it's so much time. All right, so I just realized I didn't really, since I look like I'm 19 and I'm 33, I should probably give you a little background about what I have accomplished in my young life. I graduated cum laude from college in 2.5 years. I was a probation officer. I used to be a semi-professional skier. I work at the prison now where I promoted my way up the ranks faster than any young person ahead of me. I'm one step away from a captain. In closing, we have all talked about some of the issues. We've talked about our roads. We've talked about economy, homelessness, depleting schools. All of us up here have experiences and have ideas on how we would deal with them. But what separates me as a candidate for District 3 Supervisor? I am not part of the good old boy network, which is up here today. I never ran anyone else's political
campaign. Excuse me, I need a rebuttal on that one.
Hold on, let me finish. I got my 3 minutes.
Wait a minute. He takes a stab at me. I can't speak up for myself.
Do I get to finish my 3 minutes?
Well, Mr. Kirk, finish.
I have never ran anybody's political campaign. I am not beholden to anyone, and I am who I am. Who I am is a good man. I am a good man. I'm a good father. I'm always working on being a better husband to my wife. I'm a youth director at my church. I'm a Sunday school teacher. I'm a soccer coach. I've taught his granddaughter soccer. I'm a public servant as a peace officer. I have been and will always continue to be 100% transparent on issues. And if you ask me a question, I will give you an honest answer. There is no gray area with me. Working in a prison 11 years, you learn really quick to say who you are and say what you're going to do and do it. And if I don't have an answer, I will do my due diligence to find that answer. My grandfather told me that research is the beginning of wisdom. Myself and hardworking men and women like me want to raise kids in our community that is pro-family and pro-American. Yet many times in this county and in this country specifically, we are the first ones taxed and yet the last ones to be heard. I am a citizen who is concerned about the future of my children, yet I am optimistic enough to stand up now while I can and do what I can to secure a bright future for my children and my grandchildren yet to be born. I am educated and fearless. I am reasonable and transparent. I am homegrown, and I am here to stay for the long haul. I believe in the rule of law and doing what is right on behalf of all people, but I do not ignore the majority. Sheriff Milley said when he decided not to run for re-election that it's time for the next generation to rise up. My name is Anaya Kirk. I am running for District 3 Supervisor, and I am a representation of the next generation which is rising in this county. Thank you. God bless you. And please vote for Anaya Kirk, District 3 Supervisor.
Thank you. Mr. Rasmussen.
I'm going to put my chaplain's hat on. All right. I'm going to give you a parable. You come from the valley. You buy a home up here in Twain Hart. And you go back to the valley, and you hired 5 security guards to watch your house while you're gone. So you expect everything to go well. You got 5 security guards. You come back after doing your work. You come back for the summer, and you realize there is a water leak in your home. It's completely destroyed, and not only that, the burglars came in and stole everything. That's what we're looking at here at the county. These board of supervisors, you got 2 jobs. Make sure everything works well, and we don't run a deficit. I'm going to move on to. I'm not a politician. I'm a public servant, and that's what I want to be, and that's what I'll always be, and that's what I was the day I was born. Which points to what I plan to do. If elected, I plan on donating 27% of my salary every month to local charity. The rest of the money is going to go into a separate account. It's only going to be used for expenses. At the end of the year, anything left over is going to go back to local charities too. And that's a protest to the raise. That's a protest to the deficit. And if I'm going to be one vote against 4, like Evan Royce was over the past couple of years, so be it. But at the end of the day, I know I'm helping my community and starting at the bottom, helping nonprofits and groups that want to make better this community like we've always have. And that's where it's going to be. That's how we're going to address these issues. That's how we're going to address the housing issue. That's how we're going to address the homeless issue. It's community. That's our strongest point. Lastly, when it comes to laws, Jefferson said it really well. The law is unjust. We have a duty to not follow it. We have a duty to fight against it. And that's how I stand on the law. If we have regulations and laws at the state that are affecting us, we just need to ignore it. If they can ignore sanctuary cities, why can't we? So when it comes to that, it's about us. It's about our rights. It's about the spirit of our community, and I know we can make it through this. We got tough decisions ahead of us, but we got to stick to the basics before we can get to the luxuries. And you can call me anytime. You can look me up on Facebook. You can text me, message me. I'm easy to find, very easy to find. And lastly, there's been a lot of talk. When I talk about politics, you ain't gonna see signs. You ain't gonna see trash in your mail. You ain't gonna see me trespassing on your property to waste your time. And that goes back to my chaplain's hat. I do unto others as I'd want done unto me. I don't like seeing the trash. I don't like being bugged. A lot of us live up here because of the privacy. So out of respect, let's meet halfway. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And Ms. Sylvester.
I close with these concerns. Are those who use the phrases small government and less taxes going to cut fire or roads or our public safety? Declare your cuts. Building safety, animal control, public health, veterans agencies, child support recovery, these are all part of our work. Airports, libraries, courts, what will it be, the DA or the public defender? Recreation, platitudes do not fix the problem. They create a black market. As your supervisor, I'll actively invite stakeholders and experts to the table and create a call to action on issues that affect our district. As citizens, you're experts in your communities. I'll solicit the public input on issues. I'll continue to having monthly office hours throughout the district. And when you have a problem, I'll ask, how can I make it right for you? Values drive my willingness to serve, and I value public service, education, public safety, arts and recreation, innovative solutions, our rural culture, and our natural resources. I'm also concerned because we do want a more responsive government, but one of the candidates up here will accept two full-time salaries and can't give District 3 the unimpeded attention that it needs. What's at stake? It's easy to find differences. It's more difficult to find commonality. But our democratic and our democracy and its participatory government are at stake. And the prescription for a vibrant community is that all the people take an active role in the government. You need to be heard. You don't need to be closed out. I've established multiple ways to communicate, and those avenues are going to be open while I'm in office. Thanks for allowing me to interview for this position. My qualifications and experience have prepared me to serve the community. My 4 years as your District 3 supervisor, my 7 years as a Tuolumne Fire Department board member, and my 36 years teaching our county's youth a lifetime of public service all qualify me to become your supervisor again. I've lived in the district since 1961, so I know the issues we face. And I'll be a full-time, no, double-time, supervisor. My family first moved to Miwok, then settled in Twain Hart. I attended Twain Hart Elementary, Somerville High, Columbia College, Stanislaus State, taught at Twain Hart Elementary, Somerville Elementary, Columbia College, and Stanislaus State, CSU Stanislaus. I'd ask you to please elect me full-time. Thank you very much for your time, and thanks for the great questions tonight. I loved it. And Merv, we'll be able to talk a little bit more, and we'll be able to respond because we have a lot more forums ahead of us, so we'll be able to work that out.
Conversation definitely starting here this evening. Thank you so much, candidates, for the District 2 race, Randy Hanvelt, Ryan Campbell, David Tichenal, and for District 3, Merv Cancio, Anaya Kirk, Aaron Rasmussen, and Lori Sylvester. And we do need to take a quick break. This is candidate Clark Broadcasting's Candidates Night live from the Tuolumne County Board of Supervisors meeting room in downtown Sonora, airing on AM 1450 and FM 102.7 KVML and streaming on mymotherlode.com. I'm BJ Hansen, your moderator. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by Nate's Tree Service and Faust Heating and Air. We'll return shortly with the candidates for Sonora City Council.